You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. A committee has been formed now for months with the objective of governing Iraq after its elected president is assassinated or otherwise removed from office by the U.S. and its allies. The Committee for the Liberation of Iraq was formed, quote, to promote regional peace, political freedom, and international security by replacing the Saddam Hussein regime with a democratic government, end quote. And it's made up of representatives of several conservative Washington think tanks from the National War College, the American Enterprise Institute, and the Carnegie Foundation. Joining us for our roundtable discussion are Secretary for the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq, Gary Schmidt, former U.S. Ambassador to Iraq, Edward Peck, who also served as the Deputy Director of the White House Task Force on Terrorism under Ronald Reagan, Iraqi National Congress spokesman Intifad Kanbar, and founder of the Seeds of Peace, Anna Shalal, who is also an Iraqi-American. Our discussion got off to a lively start, with Ambassador Peck jumping into the fray at the onset. Gentlemen, the Secretary of State Colin Powell said recently, quote, if war comes, the only thing I would say about the nature of that conflict is that it would be done in a way that would minimize the loss of life and for the purpose of getting rid of weapons of mass destruction and liberating the people of Iraq. Liberating the people of Iraq. That sounds like a good place for us to start our discussion. Do the people of Iraq need liberating? Who wants to begin?
Well, you know, let me start on that because I'm not an Iraqi. I'm an American, and it's Colin Powell that we're talking about. The United States certainly seems to believe that the people of Iraq need liberating, but there's an awful lot of people in this world that wonder why it is we select the Iraqis and ignore other people who are in far more desperate need of liberation, almost totally. It almost seems as if there is some sort of fixation in this capital city of America, I would hesitate to validate that, in which it's Iraq and only Iraq and nothing else really matters, which makes us look in the eyes of an awful lot of people in this world not very short of hysterical.
Well, this is Gary Schmidt. I would just say that obviously one can't solve all the world's problems all at one time.
Agreed.
And first of all, I mean, it's clear that one reason why we're focused on Iraq is because the administration thinks there is a particular threat posed by Iraq. And getting rid of that threat, they offer the opportunity for the Iraqi people to rid themselves of, you know, a tyrant who may or may not be the world's worst, but he certainly ranks up in the top two or three.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, but...
Can I say something as an Iraqi?
Yes, as an Iraqi, Intifad Kanbar.
Yes, I personally served 5 years in the Iraqi Air Force during the Iranian-Iraqi War, and I was arrested by the Iraqi military intelligence in 87. To answer Mr. Peck's, well, I don't think Mr. Peck's answered the question. He said, why not we include more countries? But he couldn't say well, we shouldn't go after Iraq. But there is something very unique about Iraq. Iraq is the only country in history that its government used chemical weapons against its own people. Iraq has about 15% of its population are in exile, which is also very rare or probably never happened in history. And Iraq has weapons of mass destruction that he used against his own people and his neighbors and invaded two countries of his neighbors. If you look within these criteria, in addition to Iraq's sponsoring of terrorism, you won't find many countries in the world. Iraq is probably the only country in the world who is uniquely have done such things to its own people, to neighbors, and to the world.
Iraq is
a unique situation and needs to be resolved.
No, all right, let's hear from Anas Shalal, who is an
Iraqi-American. I think it's to add that the Iraqi people are very suspicious about the source of their liberation. I think the fact that they feel very suspicious because they feel that the same group of people that have been responsible for their oppression in many ways, indirectly, are now becoming the liberator, and they're very suspicious of that.
There's no chance that Iraqis would not want to be liberated by Americans. In fact, we Iraqis have been demonstrating several times and through the Iraq Liberation Act of 98, which we lobbied very hard for, to make this liberation by Iraqis with American help.
Let me step in just for a second, if I may.
Yes.
Deeply suspicious.
Ambassador Peck.
Fear is the other word. You know, I am not an Iraqi, and I've had none of the problems that individuals may have had, although I lived there for 2.5 years and watched. When you step into the breach and say Iraq has invaded two other countries, well, if that is the criterion for us to get involved, there are other countries in the Middle East that have invaded other countries, and which are still there. As a
I didn't
fact.
Say only that. I said in addition to using chemical weapons against its own people and helping terrorism.
That you mentioned, so I think it deserves to be examined, because if it's the possession of weapons of mass destruction, that is not an exclusive thing. The use of weapons of mass destruction, yeah, as you probably are well aware, there is a considerable debate still raging as to exactly who did commit the horror in Halabja with the gas. And the thing that I'm concerned about more than anything else is, as an observer, I note that the only country in the world which considers Iraq to be an immediate, serious, right now threat is my country, the United States of America. None of the other countries in the region fear Saddam Hussein anywhere near as much as they fear what is likely to happen throughout the region if the United States gets involved in a war there. That's where I come out.
I think the Iraqi people also are very suspicious about the organizations that are cropping up that are going sort of in the name of liberating the Iraqi people, like the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq, like the Project for a New American Century. And those
how do you know? Did you conduct a poll inside Iraq?
No.
How do you know?
As a matter of fact, let me interject something really quickly, and this is Gary Schmidt. There was a recent poll taken by the International Crisis Group, a group which is certainly not dominated by, you know, conservative Republicans, and in fact is headed by longstanding professional Foreign Service officers and folks who, by and large, are, I would say, liberal in intention. And they took a poll, as best one can take a poll, inside Iraq. And believe it or not, the Iraqi people aren't suspicious of the invasion of the U.S. In fact, despite the fear that Saddam's internal police and apparatus can cause in that connection, the remarkable result of the poll was the degree to which they were supportive of an American-led invasion.
That's
so
right.
This
you
idea that somehow
question.
Iraq, the citizens of Iraq are afraid of the United States liberating it is just nonsense.
Well, I would be very suspicious to see such a poll. I think when the Iraqi people have seen some of the invasions, quote-unquote, that have been led by the U.S. military, they see the what is called the collateral damage, and they see that what's happened to their infrastructure and their society over the years due largely to the Americans sort of just looking the other way and always fighting them every step of the way to try to remove the sanctions that have done nothing to hurt Saddam Hussein, but everything to hurt the Iraqi people. I think the Iraqi people are very suspicious. And the idea of doing polls within Iraq, that's really an impossibility. It's impossible to actually do polls inside Iraq. But Iraqi Americans have been polled by the Zoghbi organization, and all of them, almost without exception, say they do not want to see a military invasion. They do want to see a liberation of Iraq. They do want to see Saddam Hussein go, for the most part, but most of them will tell you that they do not want to see a military invasion to do that.
Kambar?
Yes, we want a war of liberation. We want a war for Iraqis, not against Iraqis. And we want American help to do that. We couldn't do it by ourselves. One in every seven Iraqis estimated is being killed by Saddam directly or indirectly. This is a fact. Mr. Peck, four of my cousins, I buried them with my own hands. They were killed in the Iranian-Iraqi war. I know they were killed because Saddam threw us in a bad war, an unnecessary war. And I lost two cousins in the war of Kuwait. This is also an unnecessary war. So it is very sure at this time that those people were killed due to Saddam's mad politics.
But
the second thing, somebody who's not Iraqi doesn't know what's going on inside
but
Iraq.
But you also agree
easy
that
for
over half a million
that.
Iraqis have died directly due to the sanctions.
The sanctions
have
been caused by Saddam's sanctions on the Iraqi people. Saddam could have sold as much as he want oil to buy food and medicine.
That is not true.
It is very true. It is very true. And Saddam did not stop rebuilding his lavish palaces and buying his Porsche car for his son. And we know many examples from inside information and friends of Uday, who are my best friends, who told me Saddam did not slow spending on lavish palaces on his own life, buying yachts.
But the per capita income right now,
there has never been lack of money for Saddam.
Okay, Mr. Kandar.
The per capita income right now in Iraq is $700. It used to be $6,000 prior to all this nonsense.
But can I interrupt for 1 second? This is Gary Schmidt. The reality is that Saddam and Iraq is selling more oil on the open market today than it did before the Gulf War.
Oh,
the amount
goodness.
Of oil that it sells day.
My
goodness, no, sir.
Yes,
that's a fact. Now, the problem is, of course, is that the dollars go into the government coffers to buy things, which then the government hasn't been properly spending.
Mr. Schmidt, you are not aware, then, of the Oil for Food program and how it works?
I certainly am, and I know that...
See, none of the money for the Oil for Food program gets to the Iraqi government. It all goes to the United Nations.
Absolutely.
Every single penny, and the United Nations Sanctions Committee then buys things for Iraq without giving any money for Iraq to do this. You must be aware of this.
I certainly am. I'm also aware that, Ambassador Peck, as you are too, that truth is that Saddam has been selling on the black market almost as much oil as he's been selling through the oil
for
food program.
No, so it goes by truck. You know, I want to see how you do that across the Turkish border.
Okay, can I interject something?
Just a moment, please, Mr. Kambar.
The point is perhaps nobody wishes the Iraqi people ill. And the four agree on that. At the same time, I certainly do not wish ill for the American people or for the other folks in the region. Saddam Hussein is not a nice person, and I'm certainly not the least bit interested in defending him. My focus, and I'm sure that some of the gentlemen in this group as well will agree with me, my focus is how do we advance America's interests and objectives in the region? And we do not do it by ignoring the clear and obvious desire of everybody else in the world, except Great Britain, to avoid a war. If we, as Americans, can push the Pakistanis and the Indians to talk, and they share a border over which they fight, and push the Palestinians and the Israelis to talk, and they don't even really have a border, why is it that we have not spoken to Iraq on any subject at any level for 12 years to see if there isn't some other way of resolving the issue? The push has been, in my country, war, 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 no talk. We will find any excuse. Our overflights are disastrous. They're illegal. The embargo is a travesty, a catastrophe. And I do not see any reason in the world why the United States alone feels that it has the right to go in and overthrow a regime 7,000 miles from here when we have not explored any other option. And
it is not the United States. It's the Iraqi people who want to overthrow the regime, and they need help.
You're listening to Peace Watch, believe it or not. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We're joined on the line by four guests. We're joined, you just heard, former ambassador to Iraq, Edward Peck. Also on the line with us is Iraqi National Congress spokesperson Intifad Kambar. Secretary for the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq, Gary Schmidt, is on this call as well. And so is Anish Shalal, who is the Iraqi-American founder of the Mesopotamia Cultural Society and Seeds of Peace. Now, former Ambassador Peck just made a statement regarding the lack of dialogue between the U.S. and Iraq. Kambar, I think you wanted to respond to that.
Yes, first of all, about the sanctions. 23% of Iraqi population, which is the Kurds, lives under the sanctions like the rest of Iraq, but because they are not under the control of Saddam. And in spite of receiving only 13% of the oil resources, they are still living much better than in Baghdad, which is a clear indication that Saddam is stealing the food and medicine of Iraqis. Second thing, Iraqis want to be liberated from Saddam. What do you know, Mr. Peck, about Iraq? You lived in Iraq 2 years in an embassy looking at Iraqi people from tinted windows in a Mercedes, probably. We lived in Iraq. We served in the army. We've been tortured. We lost our family. We want this regime to go, and we need anybody to help us. Whoever is completely ready to help us, he's welcome. If you don't want to help us, go. But don't tell me you like me and you want to kill Saddam, or you like me and you're not helping me to remove Saddam. If you love Iraqi people, help them to remove Saddam, and then let's talk.
Let me interject something here. The U.S. has sought to liberate people around the world in the past, most recently the Afghani people from the ruling of the Taliban in the wake of September 11th and Osama bin Laden. And yet we read reports today where going in and bombing a country and displacing the ruler does not exactly spell liberation for those people. A good example is in Coast. The people continue to suffer from poverty, illiteracy, wartime disruption, and even Islamic militants who fled across the border when the Taliban was toppled. Are there long-range plans in effect for Iraq if Saddam is assassinated or toppled, or whatever you want to call it? And yes, Gary Schmidt, would you respond?
Well, I mean, I think that's just vastly overstated. For the first time in years, young Afghan women are able to go to school. Young Afghan women are able to try to be full citizens in Afghanistan, and it's only because the Taliban was overthrown. The idea that you, after a year plus, that, you know, Afghanistan's major problems would be solved automatically just because we removed Taliban, of course, is not going to happen. But the truth is, the people of Afghanistan are far freer today than they were at any time in the past almost decade. And it's only precisely because the U.S. intervened and removed the Taliban from power that these kinds of folks, women, children, and non-Islamic radicals, have a hope, have a chance at leaving a living a decent life in Afghanistan.
Honestly,
I think it's important to look at history also, and the way we've done our sort of so-called liberation. We can only look in the south of our border and look at Haiti and see how Haiti is today as opposed to when it was so-called liberated. Mm. I mean, it's 70% poverty. The people are starving to death in the streets, and we supposedly went in to liberate Haiti, and we left it in a shambles. We don't have a good stomach for this kind of stuff. The minute any problems start happening, we walk away and leave all the mess for the people there to take care of.
I'm sorry, that's
simply
not true.
Please allow him to finish his
statement. That's not the case in Haiti?
No, that's not the case in Panama. That wasn't the case in El Salvador.
How about Japan and Germany? How come nobody talks about it? How about Bosnia and Kosovo?
I just got back from Sarajevo just a few days ago. It's a mess. It is a total mess.
And under Milosevic would be good.
Excuse me, this is Gary Schmidt. I don't know of any serious scholar, either the left or the right, that thinks that the war in the Balkans could have been solved by diplomacy and more aid.
It could have been solved with early intervention.
There was interventions, and they failed miserably for precisely the reason that Slobodan Milosevic was a brutal tyrant that he was. And it wasn't until that he was removed from office that there was any chance for peace in the Balkans. As difficult as the Balkans are today, we're much better off without Milosevic.
Ambassador Peck.
The concept that it's all going to be peace and happiness in the Balkans, I don't think there's a single reasonable scholar who recognizes that the minute you pull
Ambassador
the
Peck,
out,
I never once said that, I don't appreciate Ambassador Peck.
Now you were going to let me
you misstating what I just said.
No, you said that there isn't a reasonable scholar, any scholar,
that thought
say that it wouldn't have gotten better, but they all would agree that it ain't over yet. Now,
I never said
a war in Iraq, things are going to get broken, people die, and you should make that kind of a decision as the last possible step. At the height of the Cold War, when we knew without an instant's equivocation that with a single button push, the Russians, at cost, could have blasted us off the face of the earth. Now, that's a threat with a capital T. We had an embassy there, they had one here, and we had commissions and delegations and discussions, not because we loved them and trusted them, but because we did not. And if you want to deal with Iraq, the last step, the final step, is when you've completed every other effort to settle your differences peacefully, and we haven't even started. That's what concerns me.
Gary Schmidt?
Well, I think that's just another overstatement. The reality is Saddam invaded Kuwait, and he's had more than 10 years to comply with the international obligations that the UN Security Council put down. And he's failed miserably in living up to not only resolutions on disarmament, but resolutions having to do with his own population and the resolutions dealing with the damage he caused during the war. The Security Council just recently voted 15-0, including Syria, that Saddam had not lived up to those obligations. Saddam has had more than a decade's worth of chance to bring himself within the community of nations and has refused to do so repeatedly. The record is perfectly clear. Saddam is not somebody who's going to play by the international rules Ambassador Peck would like us to play by.
Yes, now, here's my concern. You're engaging in what every nation engages in, Mr. Schmidt, selective morality. If UN resolutions are a source of concern, you can't just pick the ones you want to back and ignore the others, because there are an awful lot of Security Council resolutions on the Middle East that are being ignored with our support, not to mention the 29 that the United States has vetoed in the Security Council. And this is the sort of thing that concerns the people who live in the Middle East, that the U.S. seems to have, my country, which I served in uniform, seems to have objectives in the region which do not square with the desires and aspirations of all the people that live there.
Let me
I feel that this is going to cost us.
Okay, let me pose a direct question to Intifad Kambar. 1,000 Iraqi exiles are reportedly being trained by the military to act as go-betweens and guides for the military. Do you think that's a good idea? And what plans are there to include Iraqis in the actual government in Iraq in the event that Saddam Hussein is assassinated or toppled?
Well, what you just said is not true. What happened is...
What part is not true?
You said Iraqis would be guidance for U.S. military.
Okay, well, I'm quoting an article in today's Washington Post.
I don't believe everything you read. That's my point.
Are you saying 1,000 Iraqi exiles are not being trained by the U.S. military?
No, I didn't say that either. I'm responsible for this training, by the way. I head the Office of Mobilization Coordination in Washington, and I'm the liaison between the INC and the Pentagon. First of all, we have more than 5,000 volunteers that we gathered. This is going to be part of an insurgency force that is going to be supported by the United States, and there will be coordination. In the discussions of the Iraq Liberation Act, we worked very closely with General Wayne Downing, retired General Wayne Downing at that time in 97, to write sort of a liberation plan led by Iraqi liberation force with American backup, with American help. And those people who are going to be trained, it's not only 1,000, over 5,000, mm-hmm. and the training will be in southern Hungary, those people will become also the force which will keep law and order in liberated areas inside Iraq. Adding to that, we are working on a framework to have a government, an interim government in Iraq, which will lead this force, and will be established on Iraqi soil as soon as they have a foothold on the liberated area of Iraq.
Didn't the INC make an attempt at a liberation at another year where the U.S. was supposed to back them and then they backed away from them, where then Saddam got a hold of all the top military people in that organization and he killed about 200 officers?
That was a coup attempt by the CIA. The INC was not involved in it.
Oh.
Actually, we have worked very hard in Washington to convince everybody in Washington that we are against the coup plot or the silver bullet plot because we believe that Saddam is the biggest conspirator, and he cannot be defeated in that field. We believe the only way to remove Saddam through a liberation war or war of liberation, and that's why we have worked very hard for the Iraq Liberation Act. In the Iraq Liberation Act, there's nothing mentioning of a coup plot, and as I said, every coup plot happens, it's a gift to Saddam because Saddam will uncover it and execute a number of officers who were brave, but they were confused. And that will not work. Totalitarian regimes cannot be removed by a coup. It has proven in history.
And what plans are being made to include Iraqis in a newly formed government in Iraq?
What would happen is we are against a government in exile because we don't want to represent Iraqis from people outside Iraq like myself. We don't, by no means, we don't represent the Iraqi people. We were not elected by the Iraqi people. We just had a voice for them. And what we're trying to do is to set a framework now for this government. And once we are on Iraqi ground, we can have a government from people inside Iraq who are many of them smart and capable and make an interim government which will lead the running the life, day-to-day life in liberated areas, including, you know, everything like water supply, law and order. And we will this will transform into transitional government in the short, long run, possibly we will have a referendum for a constitution. Then we will have election.
Some observers,
some of the scenarios that were sort of put forth by the Pentagon about cordoning off the city of Baghdad and sort of squeezing and starving people out of there. Did you read those types of reports, or do you feel
what would happen
go with
is
this big
we are in a fight.
We're going to pull Saddam Hussein out.
This is not an easy road for us. We have been faced by extreme resistance by the CIA and the State Department to implement such plans. There are people who want to make Iraq invaded by American military ruler. We are against that. We don't have a rubber stamp for everything the Americans ask us for. We describe ourselves as allies, but we are often very difficult allies.
Okay.
We do what with the Iraqi people. What is the best interest of the Iraqi people, not the best interest of the cordoners of Washington.
Good for you, sir.
Thank you.
But I don't think that it's going to work that way.
Well, if you don't think, we have to try. We are desperate. We lost most of my families. Just last week, Iraqi intelligence want my threatened my cousin and my uncle and called me here in the U.S., threatening me they will kill them if I don't stop. I'm under the fire. You are not. I have to do something.
Okay. Gentlemen, we have about 3 minutes left. I think I'm going to ask everyone for a final statement. Honest, did you want to respond?
I really feel that as an Iraqi American, I'm first an American, and from a perspective of being an American, I'm certainly not comfortable with what we're doing, what we plan to do in Iraq. I feel this has nothing to do with the war against terrorism, and rather it's going to bring in more terrorists and more threats toward the U.S. than less. We've heard that from many, many leaders all over the world. I had a chance to travel for the past few weeks outside of this country, and I see the animosity toward America, and I'm not comfortable with it. So as an American, I feel this is really short-sighted. As a when I look at some of the organizations that are sort of backing this type of thing, including organizations like the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq and the Project for a New American Century, their interest is really not the Iraqi people. Their interest is just world hegemony, just kind of having the United States take control of the entire world. And this is not just some sort of hatched out idea in the middle of nowhere, but these are actual reports that have been put out to say that.
Okay.
I'm certainly not comfortable with their viewpoint saying that their interest is really to liberate Iraq. It is not to liberate Iraq.
Okay,
Intifad Kambar.
Intifad Kambar. I'd like to say that the United States of America have involved itself, unfortunately, in dealing with tyrannies and bad regimes in the Middle East, which made the United States look as a support for tyrannies. It's the time now to have the United States do it rightly, as President Bush doing it rightly now, to support the liberation of Iraq and establishing democracy in Iraq. I think there's a great opportunity to improve and change the image about the United States and start democratic revolution in the Middle East that is well deserved years ago.
Well, you know, how can anybody argue with what you
Edward
just
Peck.
Said? This is Edward Peck. You know, the horror of what we're discussing is that while we would all like to have the same thing happen, we have widely different ideas of how to go about it. If Saddam Hussein were to slip in the bathtub today and you know, kill himself by falling, it would be blamed on the United States because we've made every effort we could, every method we could to get rid of him. And it will cost my nation, I think, dearly over a wide area for a long time to come, not even to mention what might happen in the Middle East where Iraq may implode, which would be a disaster, or explode, which will be a catastrophe. Because the last thing that anybody should want in the Middle East, and especially the United States, the very last thing we need in the Middle East is more instability. And that's what we're very likely to generate if we go in as an outsider and destabilize that country, because the process of destabilization, on the basis of my experience, does not stop merely because the colors of a map change.
Gary Schmidt.
Well, first, I'd like to invite anybody, any of the listeners, to visit the websites for either the Project for the New American Century or the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq. You know, decide for yourself whether or not these committees are designed for, you know, just to exercise U.S. power, or whether, in fact, they are efforts to bring freedom and democracy to parts of the world that, in fact, have suffered way too long under the so-called stability conventional thinking that you just heard from Ambassador Peck. The problems in the Middle East right now are the problems brought about by failed regimes which have not, in fact, ever joined modernity and becoming liberal and democratic. And it's time that we changed our policies and changed our attitudes to the Middle East to recognize that the people of the Middle East deserve as much freedom as we have in the United States today.
Gentlemen, it's been a vigorous discussion. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Keith Shalajan, Benta Bertlin, Mike Korsch, and Reem Kahuta. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producers, Larry Binsky and Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting the website at PacificaArchives.org.
or by calling 1-800-735-0230. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.